Welcome back to the Killer Frogs Killer Minute, a Fan Nation college football podcast brought to you weekly by KillerFrogs.com. I'm Brett Gibbons, and once again, I'm joined by the great Nate Cross. Nate, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Brett. I'm super glad to be back on.
Yeah, super happy to have you. I'm excited about today's topic. We've done some kind of in-the-weeds stuff, some serious stuff. Today's not so serious. We're doing Big 12 college football superlatives. If anybody has been to high school lately, you probably know what we're getting at here, but we're going to start with TCU football and then dive into the Big 12 as a whole. To be clear, we are projecting these superlatives by the end of the season, so these aren't necessarily like preseason superlatives, right? So we're kind of saying, hey, by the end of the year, here's who we expect to fill these superlatives. So there's not much pretense needed. Let's just go ahead and dive right into it. Short and sweet on our intros here. Let's start with TCU football. And the first one I wanted to talk about is most improved player. This is, I believe, an award they will actually physically hand out to the team. I'm not sure if TCU in particular does it or not. But if you had to pick one player who would be the most improved on the TCU football roster, who would that be?
I'm going to go ahead and go with Mark Perry, safety. He had a great season last year coming in and helping the Frogs out a lot. But I think he has a lot of potential that wasn't seen. And I think by the end of this year, it's going to be fully there, and he's going to make an impact on this team. So I'm super excited to see what he has to offer this year.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like Mark Perry as a player, pretty good rotational guy last year. But he's gotten even some talk about some potential all-conference, you know, possibility. He's got that ceiling that they're talking about. I think that's the really excellent player to choose. I like it. I like how we kind of went off. You know, it's not Chandler Morris. It's not those obvious guys right at the start. And I was going to leave that one up to you. So Mark Perry's our pick. I want to move on to the best defensive player by the end of the season. Who do you think will have had the biggest defensive impact?
This one was tough for me, especially with the defensive players that TCU does have returning. I went ahead and said linebacker Jamoy Hodge. He had an impactful season last year, even though he was the topic of debate about whether he injured players on purpose, which is not true. No. I mean, he plays with a heart, and he plays with such a physicality that no other player really plays to. He's always hustling, and he's always getting to the ball as quick as possible. I love to watch him play, and I think he's going to be the best defensive player at the end of the year.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that because I was seeing it floated around on Twitter about the whole TCU injuring guys on purpose. If that was really their case, and they had some sort of bounty gate, you know, New Orleans Saints stuff going on, there was a couple of pretty good quarterbacks that they played at the very end of the year. Three of them in particular that they may have wanted to attempt to injure. If that was actually their goal, but they didn't do that. So I'm going to say that, yeah, they probably didn't do it on purpose. You know, physical players make physical plays is what it is. I went with the other linebacker, Johnny Hodges. We've heard a lot about his story, about how, you know, the kind of depths that he had fallen to when he was at the Naval Academy, comes to TCU, refines his stride. He was awesome last year, the leading tackler for TCU. And he even got some, you know, some all-conference looks. I think he is going to be uber productive, 100-plus tackle kind of guy. I like where TCU's defense is going. I think they're going to improve this coming year. Not that they weren't good last year, but I think we could see some improvement here. And, you know, it begins with the captain. It begins with the heart and soul of that defensive team. I think Johnny Hodges, it has the potential not just to be an NFL draft pick, but to be a day two guy even, because right now I think his projections are kind of that late day three, but we could see him climb up to there, kind of like we saw with D Winters last year, where, you know, he wasn't really on the NFL radar, but by the end, he was a coveted draft prospect. So I like Johnny Hodges. It sounds like we're both pretty high on the linebacking core here for TCU this year. Let's go to the other side of the ball. Who's going to be the best offensive player by the end of the year?
This is another tough one for me. I went it back and forth, and part of me said Savion Williams. He has similar size to Quentin Johnson, and he was mentored pretty much by Quentin Johnson. But I also like Trey Sanders and JoJo Earl transferring. I like both of them as well, and I think they both can make an impact right off the bat. JoJo's he's fast, and he's going to be I mean, he's just going to be the player that TCU always has on their roster, and they like that fast receiver, and I like him. And Trey Sanders says he's back to where he was, and if that's true, people better be ready.
Yeah, I saw that quote that he had about he feels like a five-star again, and that's great. Yeah, TCU with a couple reclamation projects between Trey Sanders and Johnny Hodges. I'm going to go with the transfer as well. I'm going to go with JP Richardson from Oklahoma State. He's a burner. He's a deep guy. We saw Quinnen Johnston thrive as a burner and a deep guy, climbing up to be a first-round NFL draft pick. I don't know if JP Richardson has the first-round ceiling. Maybe he does. I wouldn't have guessed that Quinnen Johnston would be a first-round pick before last year, but I think he's going to be a really important piece to this offense to be able to take the defense top off the defense. But I also wanted to shout out Griffin Kell. I know he's not necessarily like an offensive player, but he's awesome. He's getting All-American considerations before the season here, and he does score points. So I'm going to lump him in with the offense and say it's either Griffin Kell or JP Richardson. But I did want to touch on, because you said transfer, and that's actually something I didn't have in the docket before we started recording. But if we have to give a superlative to the best transfer on TCU, who do you think that would be by season's end?
I really like the Trey Sanders transfer. He fitted a void that we really needed to fit. I mean, you have Imani Bailey, and he's super talented, but I don't know if he's ready to be that top guy. Trey Sanders has seen that capability to be that top guy. His injury just held him back. So I was super excited to see him transfer to TCU.
Yeah, it's hard to argue against Trey Sanders on this one. I think he's going to have the most direct impact from day one. I already gave the JP Richardson as the top offensive player, so I guess I'd have to roll him as well. But I think Trey Sanders is a terrific choice. This one I'm going to let you handle on your own, because you are more involved with the team. You're there at practices all the time. You know the culture of this team. Team MVP. Now, this doesn't have to be the best player on the team, but, you know, I'm going to let you interpret it your way. Who's your team MVP come season's end?
Yeah, I thought about this one like a long time, and I came to the conclusion that I think it's going to be Josh Newton. The man is the heart of the team. You saw in the Carter Boys episodes, if you watched them, he was always there for his teammates. He was them pumping them up in the locker room, pumping them up in team meetings. He was always there for a team. It was never a me mentality. It was always we. And I really like that about him. And I think he's going to make a huge impact, especially with him being coming off a good year, getting all those interceptions and being a threat to receivers and quarterbacks. I'm excited to see what he does this year, and I think he's really ready to take that step.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's a great pick, and I wanted to warn people in advance. I know there's a lot of people that kind of base their opinions of players off of the box score and, you know, stats at the end of the year. Josh Newton's not going to be that guy this year. Like, let's just put that out there. He's not going to have the gaudy numbers that he had last year, because people aren't going to be throwing to him. He was a huge beneficiary of quarterbacks going away from Trey Hodges Tomlinson and instead having to default to throw over to Josh Newton's side. So he's going to be really productive. But like you see in the NFL with shutdown corners, they don't have great stats because they're not being thrown at. So I encourage people, before you form your opinion about Josh Newton's season this year, go back and look at the actual, like, how many targets did he have? How many passes did he actually cover? Because chances are, you know, if I'm an offensive coordinator coming into a game against TCU, and I know Josh Newton's on one of our sides, unless I have a real stud to that side that I'm going to be throwing at a lot, I'm probably going to be like, hey, let's get some of these other guys into the offense, because I just don't want to throw at him. We saw what happened last year when you throw at him. He gets a ton of interceptions, ton of PBUs. I like him a lot. I think he's a great player. So I think that's a great, great pick. I want to move along to the unsung hero. That means that he may not be in the spotlight at the end of the year, but he had a massive, massive impact on this team. Could be on the field, could be off the field. Again, I'll leave it up for your interpretation. Who is your unsung hero for the TCU team this year?
I think Cordell Russell, freshman. He may not get a huge amount of playing time in the first few games, or maybe he does. Who knows? But there's quite a few receivers on this roster, and having Cordell Russell there, looking after these receivers, I think he's ready to make that impact. He's a great player. I've seen tapes of him. He looks great. Has similar size, if not a little taller and bigger than Quinnen Johnston. I think he's going to be a great pick. And by the end of his like up by the end of this year, I think he's going to make a huge jump and be ready for better things even next year and towards the end of this year.
That's a great unsung hero, because looking at the Our Lads depth chart that goes three deep at each of the receiver positions, he's actually not listed on there currently. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have a spot in the offense. And, you know, Our Lads, what they do is they set depth charts. They collect as much information as they can, but they're not accurate. You know, they're not 100% accurate. These aren't the coaches submitting this to here. So when the game day rosters do come along, I'm sure we'll see his name up there. I think that's a great unsung hero, you know, if you're not even seeing him on here. The guy that I'm going with is somebody I've been banging the table for all season long. People listening, if they've listened to every episode, are probably sick of me saying his name by now, but Chance Nolan. I think he's experienced. I love the ad. I think he's going to be an unsung hero in the way that he's going to support the people in front of him. And currently that's Chandler Morris. And also, pardon me here, Josh Hoover is ahead of him on the depth chart last I checked. So I think he's going to be able to support those guys. I think he's a good foundation piece in the locker room, kind, you know, teaching these guys, how are you preparing for the game? How are you watching film? What did you see against this team? That kind of experience, I think, matters a lot. And as we know, the quarterback position is the most important in all of sports. So I think having a good veteran voice in the locker room, I like Chance Nolan a lot. I think he's going to be the unsung hero. You will not see him in the stat sheet. You know, God forbid, actually, we see him in the stat sheet, because then that means something happened to Chandler and to Josh, which, you know, hoping that does not happen. So, I like what we did with TCU football there. I kind of dug a little bit deeper. We didn't say Chandler Morris for any of these because we wanted to go a little bit deeper in that. I really appreciate that. So let's jump into the Big 12 as a whole. And now I'm shifting from players to teams. We're just going to talk about teams here because there's so many players. We could go on for like 3 hours about superlatives here. So I want to start off in the Big 12, the most underrated team. Who is your most underrated team this season?
This season, I'm going to go with BYU. I really like Keaton Slovis. I like him as a quarterback. I liked him when he was at Pitt. I think he was always just underrated quarterback, and I think he's going to fit well with BYU. And I like what the BYU coach said. They have a lot of depth, even though people don't give them credit. I mean, they have two to three quarterbacks that are ready to go. They have two to three receivers. I mean, it's kind of like TCU. They got depth. And I think they're ready for that jump to the Big 12, even though it's going to be a bigger competition. I think they're ready, and I think they're kind of getting disrespected just a tiny bit. But that's easy to do when you have the Texases, the OUs, all up there. So I think they're going to be better than people think.
If people want to go back and listen to our last episode I did with Davis, we did the college, the preview magazine, and we talked about BYU a little bit. And Davis agrees with you. He likes BYU a bit more than I do. I personally am not really that big a believer in Keaton Slovis myself, but that's a difference of opinion. I'm not necessarily right or wrong. The one thing, though, that I do really like about BYU coming into the Big 12 is that they're going to be one of the best coach teams from day one. Now, they had to make a change at defensive coordinator. They brought in Jay Hill, the head coach from Weber State, who brought along an All-American FCS corner with them, which is pretty good. But Kalani Sitake has done such a terrific job with this program. And there were rumors about him leaving for bigger jobs, and he shut that down and came back to BYU. So if anything, they are going to be really well coached, and being well coached with a decent quarterback goes a long way when it comes to college football. There's another team that people are getting sick of me talking about, but UCF. I like them a lot this year. I even put a flyer bet for those of you that are betting people. I am personally to actually win the Big 12 conference. That doesn't necessarily mean that I'm saying that they will win the conference, but I'm just saying that, you know, the way that the math works out, the odds are just way too long for what I think they are. I think they're going to be good. They're extremely well coached. They have a Power 5 experienced coach in Gus Malzahn from the SEC, who's at Auburn for a long time. I like their quarterback a lot in John Rhys Plumlee. I think they added some guys strategically throughout the portal. And, you know, because they're over there in Florida, and kind of the same to BYU here, is they're not in that necessarily the Big 12 footprint, so people aren't thinking about them as much. I like that we both went with newcomers. That surely won't ruffle any feathers at all to the longtime Big 12 stands out here. Top of the class. This is the team that I am projecting to be the best in the Big 12. I don't know if you want the same route, but who is your top of the class for the Big 12?
I went with Texas. I hate it. But I feel like they have the most potential. They got the best players, in my opinion. They have a great receiving core. Quarterback, he's going to keep getting better, even though whether you like it or not, he's going to keep getting better. But I like that. I like Texas, and that's why I went with them.
Yeah, I want Texas as well. It's hard not to. I know that there's a lot of people that are going to be like, well, they haven't proven anything, they haven't done anything. And you know, we can argue the merit of whether or not Texas pans out to their preseason expectations till the sun goes down. I get that. What is not arguable though is that their roster is the best in the Big 12. Cut and dry, period. Stamp it. There is no other team that contends with the type of talent on this roster. Now you see the Miamis, the Texas A&Ms, they are all really talented and they don't pan out. And Texas is right in that. If it's not this year, it's never. That's how I see it. I mean, they're going to go off to the SEC and I don't know if they'll be able to contend over there. They're definitely never going to be the preseason favorite for the SEC title. But yeah, Texas, top of the class. And like you said, you know, Quinn Ewers will improve. And if he doesn't improve, they've got two fully capable quarterbacks sitting behind him at least to come in there and pick it up. We talked about that camp battle a couple of episodes ago. Go check that out if you've not listened to it yet. But yeah, from top of the class to most overrated, a lot of people I'm sure would answer are top of the class and the most overrated. But who is your most overrated team coming into this year?
The Baylor Bears. I really don't like Blake Shapen at quarterback for them. I feel like he didn't do them any justice last year, even though people were saying he was the next quarterback for them. But after seeing what he did against TCU, they had that game. But he threw away the bag and he just looked rattled the whole game, and he looked that way all season. He might have should have stuck with baseball, just saying that.
Certainly no animosity there. There's no rivalry between TCU and Baylor. I'm actually with you on the Blake Chapin thing. I think he's capable, but extremely erratic. And I mean, I just bring up the West Virginia game in particular. Like Chapin single-handedly gave that game away. He fumbled the ball that put West Virginia right back into it. That game was over. You know, Chapin, he's just erratic with turnovers and stuff. I'm with you on the Chapin one. I don't know if I'm going to call Baylor the most overrated because I have a team I think is a little bit more overrated, and that is Kansas. And good Lord, what a day it is that we get to say Kansas is an overrated football team, but I think that they are. They had a lot of games bounce their way last year. They had some overtime wins, a lot of come from behind wins. You know, Jalen Daniels, great player. But that offense had to score like 35, 40, 50 points a game to win. And sometimes when they scored 50 points, they still didn't win. You know, they collapsed at the back half of the season, started off 5-0. They got College Game Day. They got ranked. And then unfortunately, Daniels went down with an injury, but they have a very good backup in Jason Bean, and they still weren't winning games. And then Daniels comes back and they still didn't win games. So I think that it's a team that, like, hey, it was a really cool story last year. America was able to rally around them in the first couple of months of the season. It was awesome to see. But you know what? That time has passed. And I like Lance Leipold, but the roster is just not that talented. They bring a lot of guys back. Defensively, that's not great for them bringing all those guys back. I think we're going to see a huge regression from them. You know, I don't often disagree so vehemently with like Phil Steele and all the, you know, the proven metrics, but he's saying Phil Steele projects him to make a bowl game. I don't think they win four games. So that's where I have a little bit of a disagreement. They're my lowest rated team in the Big 12 this year. Yeah, Kansas, we'll see. Great story. I don't think they repeat. Moving on to the most improved team year over year. So from the end of 2022 to the end of this coming season, who do you foresee as the most improved team?
I like Texas Tech for this one. I feel like they keep making those jumps each year. I mean, they may end up with not the best of results, but they're making bowl games. And I loved what they did in the bowl game. They put it to Ole Miss, right?
Smoked them.
Yeah,
Absolutely
smoked
smoked
them.
them.
And they looked really polished. And if they can figure out the quarterback and receiver, like just connectivity, I think they'll really make a jump. And if their defense can just hold people, I think they're going to be the team that's going to be the most improved at the end of this year.
Interesting. If they improve too much, they may be the Kansas State from last year where they're actually making a run at that Big 12 title. I'm not saying that Texas Tech is going to win the Big 12 title, but you know, if they make that jump from 8 wins, I mean, that's pretty good. I like Iowa State for this one. They had an atrocious year last year. The offense was one of the worst in the country. I think it was the worst in the Big 12 statistically, but yet they still weren't the worst offense in the state of Iowa, which I thought was kind of hilarious. Their defense is really good. They lose Will McDonald, top 15 NFL draft pick. That's kind of hard, but they do bring a lot of pieces back. I don't think Hunter Decker is that bad. I know that's hard to say for someone who threw like 12 picks last year against, I think, only 18 touchdowns, you know, over 3,000 yards. They lose their top receiver in Xavier Hutchinson. I'm not making a great case for them to be improved, but I think it's really hard to be as bad offensively as they were last year. I mean, if they're scoring 20 points a game, they win like 3 more games than they did last year. They lost 10-9. They lost 11-14. They lost 20-14. It's just like, it's a tough team to watch last year. I don't know that they can regress all that much. I do believe in Matt Campbell a little bit. I don't think he's, you know, the next prospect, you know, when they're talking about him going to Notre Dame or, you know, possibly Ohio State in the future, something like that. I don't think he's at that level, but I think he's good enough to improve on a team that went 4-8 last year because their offense, again, was just dreadful. I like Deckers a little bit. I think that they have a nice receiver moving up that can replace Xavier Hutchinson potentially. Iowa State's my pick for the most improved team. All right, so that was more of our analysis side. Let's get into more of the fun side where there are no right or wrong answers that have to be backed up with numbers. Best uniform. Big 12's packed with great uniforms, I think. What's your favorite uniform in the Big 12?
My favorite uniform is TCU's blood uniform. I think it's the coolest uniform. It uses a color that's really not at TCU that much. You don't see it every day. And it puts a little like spark to TCU, and it's always like a good tradition when it's around, and TCU has had some comeback wins. So I think it's not only a good uniform overall, I think it's good for the team.
I won't argue with the comeback wins and the stuff in it. Spoiler alert, we're going to go to worst uniform next. I may bring that one back up, but we'll get there. We'll get there. I have to go with Oklahoma State. Their whole palette is awesome, but I really like the white helmets, the orange jerseys and the white pants, throwing it back to those Barry Sanders days with the script Cowboys on the side. I think they're just electric. I think they look fast in those teams. And again, like anybody can be Barry Sanders with his ball in hand if they're wearing that uniform combination. So I like all of what Oklahoma State does, specifically though, the white, orange, white. Worst uniform. I will mention the TCU blood uniform. I'm not a big fan of adding colors in that aren't part of that team's repertoire already. I don't necessarily know if the red matches the purple, but hey, again, I'm not going to argue with the results in them. If there's like, you know, I grew up in Cleveland. I'm a huge Cleveland fan, and the Cavaliers busted out their black uniforms. I don't love them now, but we came back from down 3-1 in the NBA Finals with black uniforms. So all of a sudden they have a special place in my heart. Doesn't mean they're great. I have a different answer for my actual worst one. That was just an honorable mention, but I want to hand it to you, the worst uniform in the Big 12.
The Baylor yellow, all yellow uniforms. It's just disgusting. It's disgusting. I just don't like them. I mean, they used to do good with it, like in the times where 2014 Baylor, when they used to have the gold helmets and stuff, but I just feel like those all yellow uniforms are just not it.
I prefer the yellow over the old, they called it gold, but it was more like a dark beige. I wasn't a huge fan of those. It did look good on RG3, but that's because RG3 is really good at football. I'm kind of with you on that. I'm not a huge fan of highlighter colors, and I don't have the disdain for Baylor that most TCU fans do. So I kind of understand seeing that. Like for me, it's like seeing the maize and yellow. I'm just like, ugh, or maize and blue. I'm sorry. I'm like, ugh, awful Michigan. So I get the animosity there. My actual worst uniform, though, is the Kansas Powder Blues, where they have that big, ugly Jayhawk on the side. I know it's a throwback, but don't incorporate the Powder Blues. It's too close to the colors that they already have, and I don't think it looks very good. They wore those a few times last year. I hated them every single time. They look soft, honestly, when they wear them. They're not the most hard-nosed team, but yeah, not a fan of those. The best stadium in the Big 12. If you have Amon G. Carter Stadium written down, I will let you have it, but I'm going to also make you answer another one if that was your choice. What's your top stadium?
Well, it's not. Boone Pickens is my favorite. Beautiful stadium. And I think it just gives like a fun feel to it, as well as a fancy stadium. But I think that will change when Texas Tech has their new stadium, whenever that comes. But right now it's Boone Pickens.
Yeah, Boone Pickens is nice. I love the gold foil trim that they have throughout there. It makes it feel so high class. And Oklahoma State already has a beautiful campus. And to be able to fold that in there, I like how it's really enclosed, how they have the suites completely surrounding the outside. And then the end zone walled off with the basketball arena, traps noise in there. It's a really loud place. I think that's a very good choice. I like it. I went with the rival. I went with Oklahoma. I don't know what it is. It's not technically, it's not amazing. It's not brand new. Their press box is really old, but something about the Palace on the Prairie, even just the name of it, it's gorgeous. It exudes tradition. I like, there's not really a bad seat in the house. Tickets are pretty affordable to get there too. And I'm not a huge Oklahoma fan. They've beaten up on my Buckeyes a lot. So I'm not a huge fan of them, just like any TCU fan probably isn't a huge fan of them either. But man, their stadium, it's history, tradition. I love it. It's not going to feel right in the SEC. It's not going to feel right with the SEC logo in there. I think it is the history of the Big 12 and Big 8 and those kind of schools. Oklahoma is probably my favorite. Best college town. This is a little contentious, but what is your favorite college town in the Big 12?
I said Morgantown and Stillwater. I really like both of those. Stillwater's a true college town, and so is Morgantown. They're not really big cities, but you know they're a college town with the college feel, and they're smaller, and they got things to do that every college student or people visiting want to do on game day. And I really like both of them.
I like what you said. They're a true college town, because that's where the contention comes in. Because the second that you say that Austin isn't the best college town, people get on you. I lived in Austin for a while. It is a great city. It is not a college town. I know that it revolves around Texas, in sports, but there's so much more than the college feel to Austin. I think it's a little bit too big. I love the varsity. I love Austin. I really do. I don't think it's a true college town. Now, then you get into the debate of Baton Rouge, one of the great college towns, but it's still got that big city feel to it. That's a little bit of a gray area. I agree with you on Morgantown. That was actually one of my picks. I also put out Lubbock. I know people are going to scoff at that because it's in the middle of nowhere. You can't get there. But for being so self-contained, I think Lubbock's awesome. I think it's a lot of fun, especially on game days. They really have kind of an unsung downtown scene. Really good food out there as well. So I like Lubbock. I know people are going to crucify me for that. But hey, when there's nothing around you for hours, you have to make your college town kind of good. But yes, Morgantown, awesome college town. The final one that I have for us today, the best tradition, or maybe favorite tradition. Let's not say, I won't use best because that's completely subjective. But your favorite tradition in the Big 12, what is it?
So I have two. One's going to be not biased, and it's going to be the Oklahoma State paddles that they use on game day. I really think that gets into players' heads, especially when they're beating on the wall. It's loud, and that's hard to contain. And there's nothing you can say about it. It's a college feel, and it gets into players' heads, and I like it. And the next one is the Froghorn for TCU. Even it makes national headlines. When we were in the playoffs, they were talking about the Froghorn. And I think TCU does a good job. There's really nothing like it. You're not going to see another frog like that. And I think it's pretty cool. And you can hear it for miles upon miles. You know it's football time in Fort Worth when you hear it.
From an outsider's perspective, it is objectively weird. It is a weird thing. It's weird to look at, but it's great. I'm so on board that I didn't realize how, I guess I'll just continue with the word, weird that TCU in general was with the Hypnotoad, and then they got the Foghorn, the Froghorn, and it's so great though. I like it a lot. I like that one. I also went with two because I can't just choose one. I went with, piggybacking off the last one, Take Me Home, Country Roads. I love it. You have to be there for a win. So they don't sing it every week, especially with West Virginia the past couple of years. But I think it's so great. It's so exciting to be in there. I'm a huge country music fan as well. So like, that's kind of exciting to hear that in there. I think that's one of the great traditions, not just in the Big 12, but nationally. It's one of my favorite. And then the other one, which is an honorable mention, is the tortillas in Lubbock. I think that's hilarious. It's a huge inconvenience. And it's gotten to the point where you can't just walk in with them in your hand. You have to smuggle them in somehow. And they're checking the student gate specifically for tortillas. But nevertheless, they sneak them in and they throw probably 300 of them on the field over the course of the game. Interestingly, Air Force has something similar to it. I don't know if they were first or if they copied them or neither. They throw wrapped Kraft singles onto the field. I saw that in Arlington. It's a strange thing. Don't know why they do it, but I like it. Hey, I'm a sucker for weird tradition. So if you got a weird tradition, I'm all about it. But thanks everyone again for tuning into the Killer Frogs Killer Minute College Football Podcast. We got to work on that name. That is a long name. I'm still fixing it. Find us at killerfrogs.com or on Twitter at killerfrogs. I'm at Road to CFB, and you can find Nate at Nate Cross 474783. Nate Cross 474783. I want to make sure I'm confident with that. And continue the conversation over there on Facebook. It's dying down a little bit. It's July. There's not a lot going on, but college football season's right around the corner. So make sure to hop on there, continue the conversation, share your favorite tradition, your college town. I know that you guys listening have a take on our Texas top of the class thing. At least someone out there hates that we said that. If you liked what you heard, though, subscribe to us over on your podcast app of choice, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever you use, and drop us a review. That's going to be the best way to help us grow and reach more college football fans. And check back next week for another episode of the Killer Frogs College Football Podcast. I'm Brett Gibbons. That's Nate Cross, and we'll catch you all next time.